Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. It is the 15th, and we have a terrific panel for you, and we welcome you to the proceedings. Let me introduce everybody to you. Before we do that, though, I do want to just remind you that you can always be a part of the program. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. I'll tell you, in that walk, 4:30, pitch black, it was cold, and there were some icy spots on the way. So I was being pretty paranoid, I'll tell you that much. Somebody might ask, well, why is such a dope that you continue to do this? It's called compulsivity.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, it's cold. It's going to get worse, and there'll be snow. And all that stuff. Not to be a downer.
And there's no such thing as a gym right now, of course, because when it gets last year, I would walk in the gym, round and round and round in circles. But now, nothing doing.
Well,
so now I have to make a path through my house, up and down the stairways,
up and down the stairs.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, we wish you the best, of course, in this endeavor.
Well, thank you, Joe. I appreciate that.
Let's go on and introduce Mike Spain to you. He is the former Times Union Associate Editor. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, and I do most of my walking in daylight.
Yes. It probably is safer.
How common of you.
Let's see. We also welcome investigative journalist in Albany, UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
I'm good. I'm warm. I stay under the covers reading a book and playing computer games, and you don't have to worry about darkness or black ice. Just the best.
That's true. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. That is you mitigate the disasters. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller is here. Good morning, J.P. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. This morning I ventured into someplace even more dangerous, which was the post office.
Oh, dear.
It was a mob scene of people sending out packages. And I have to really give a big thanks and tribute to our postal workers. They're doing yeoman's work and doing a great job.
This is a true story, but last night I was putting the dogs had their final walk, and we were putting the dogs to bed, and I heard some commotion outside. It was about, well, I don't know, maybe about 9:50, and I looked out, and our mail was being delivered.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah, 9:50 at night.
Not only that, Joe, our guy, Bob, he's out there at 5 o'clock in the morning now. So we had our conversation, and I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, there's just so many packages and so many people that we have to do it this way. And I said, well, do you get overtime? He said, yeah, but let me tell you, when you have to work this much,
right?
How many hours a day? Would you like to work 24 hours a day, he said to me. I said, yeah, sure. But
well, it's tough for them. They're lugging all of those packages, and of course they still have, you know, those mail-in ballots from Michigan that they're carrying around with them. So it's a lot. It really is.
I once asked my guy how many miles do you walk a day. He said 8. By the time he gets out of the truck and does it, 8 miles, I think he said.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
It's a lot. It's certainly a lot. Well, I echo JP's sentiment to our fine postal workers and the amazing job that they do every single solitary day. All right, let's get started.
I want their boss to get fired on the first day of the Biden administration.
You know what? The ones I've talked to want that too.
Revenge.
It seems to be a sentiment of the postal workers I've talked to. Well, good morning. Let's go. Well, yesterday was what we call in the biz a very busy news day. There was a lot going on. We had a vaccine that was distributed for the first time in the United States of America. The Electoral College met and said, okay, finally, that Joe Biden will be the president-elect of the United States. The president-elect gave a speech last night, and last but certainly not least, William Barr resigned as Attorney General of the United States, saying that he will leave next week. So a lot to talk about.
Now there's a stand-up guy.
Yeah. So, you know, because you can't just pull it out for another month. You have to vacate, get out while the getting's good. You have all your Christmas parties, you have everybody in there, and then you leave. Let's go with the Electoral College first. It was made official, and some size of relief there, officially affirming that Joe Biden had won. This is the president continues his attempt to subvert the national democratic process and puts pressures ultimately on Republicans to do something that is really unusual, to acknowledge the outcome of the election that happened a month and a half ago. So it began at 10 a.m. in New Hampshire. It finished up yesterday. It wound its way through It wound its way through Albany, where just blocks from the studio, Bill and Hillary Clinton voted for Mr. Biden, along with 27 other electors in New York State. And when California cast its 55 votes for Joe Biden around 5:30, it pushed him past the threshold of 270 for the votes needed to win the presidency. So with the Electoral College behind him, Mr. Biden called for unity while forcefully denouncing the president and his allies for their assault on the nation's voting system. In an address in Wilmington, Delaware, he said in Republican efforts to get the Supreme Court to undo the result represented a, quote, position so extreme we've never seen it before, and called the attacks on election officials at the local level unconscionable. Alan.
Well, there's so much to say, Joe, other than the fact that I thought that the Biden speech was excellent. I, of course, was sleeping when he was actually doing it, but I woke up at 12 o'clock, turned on my app, and which you're not supposed to do if you're interested in sleeping at night, and watched the speech. And I thought it was very good, except for, you know, somebody should have given him a glass of water, but otherwise it was excellent.
Or a lozenge, yeah.
Yeah, otherwise it was excellent. And I thought it was forceful enough. It wasn't outrageous, but it said basically he was shaking a finger at Trump and saying, cut it out now. This is not acceptable, the way a really good parent would set limits after putting up with a bunch of nonsense. And I thought that was terrific. I am sitting here just wondering what the next thing is going to be. You know, I'm quite worried about one thing, and that is Trump has tried all of the so-called legal machinations and it hasn't worked. But now, subtly, he's calling out the Proud Boys and people like that. And that becomes the potential for real, real trouble. You should read my mail, Joe. I'm saving it all in one place. So should anything happen, you know, it'll all be one place in a computer. And the police could take a look at it and see who done it. So not that I'm paranoid, of course. And this is a real bad time in the American discourse.
Well, I only disagree with you on one point. I don't know how subtle it is.
Which part?
Well, his calling on the Proud Boys. I don't know how subtle it is.
No, it's not subtle.
Yeah.
It's not subtle. I agree with you. If I said subtle, it's because I was in another world.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's it seems to be pretty overt and is continuing. Mike.
Yeah, what I liked about Biden's comments was he was praising essentially many, many Republican officials, you know, secretaries of states, governors, local election officials, both Democrat and Republicans. But he was trying to bring that sense that the system succeeded because all of us did our job. And of course, I did also like his calling out of those who were continuing to, you know, just not accept the results of the election, the very clear results of the election. And I liked his tone. It's just striking to me that some Republicans, I mean, a few Republicans are now coming around, but even some well-known Republicans, John Cronin of Texas, you know, he had spoken out, the senator had spoken out against that crazy Texas lawsuit,
right,
and said it was embarrassing. But even he said yesterday, while in one side of his mouth saying there should be, you know, a page turned, a peaceful transition, he did say that Trump had the right to continue to challenge the election in court. I mean, you know, there is a right we have to go to court, but it's wrong to wage frivolous, wasteful, divisive lawsuits. And even a guy like him doesn't feel safe. A Texas Republican doesn't feel safe enough just repudiating what Trump says. Well, it's scary.
It is scary. And the line that's driving me crazy is that, Republican senators who are saying, well, you know, it certainly appears that he will, but we'll see what happens on the first. And it most likely will be Joe Biden who will be elected president, but we'll see the process play out. I would rather they not say anything. It just seems silly.
It just shows the grip that Trump continues to have on Republicans. And they're terrified of making him angry because he'll come after them.
Didn't they learn anything in history class? I mean, at what point did they say, you know, the continuation of democracy is more important than my stinking office, which I am so intent on? I'm willing to sell out the United States in order to stay in office. Unbelievable.
Oh, I do suspect that maybe by June or July, they'll accept that Biden is president.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be good. Yeah. Once they notice that their paychecks are signed by somebody else. Rosemary Armeo.
Well, as won't be a surprise to you guys, I'm far less hopeful than either any of you or the president-elect. We have a country where Putin has said congratulations to Biden before Mitch McConnell has. That's still the situation in place. And we have Joe Biden saying, peace, unity, let's move forward. No, I mean, I really think there needs to be some accountability here, including Barr, who's now escaped. He deserved to have been impeached for his misrepresentation of the Mueller report and for the multiple times he used the DOJ as the personal law office of the president. And that's going to now just go away and possibly be used as a model by the next attorney general. And we don't have to wait for the next attorney general for the next outrage. Why do you think Barr wanted to get away? It might have been his pride and pushing back against being bullied. But I think there's more hell coming. I think there's going to be outrageous pardons. And I think there's going to be a setup of some special prosecutors, maybe even to investigate Biden and his son, that will be set up in a way that will hinder Biden's ability to undo it when he takes over on the 20th. The call to violence is, that's that subtle thing. If there's anything about Trump that's subtle, that he's used all along. But he's also using every legal mechanism possible and open to him to disrupt and to discredit. And that is awful. I think Biden is also wrong in saying that the system worked. It did not. We were saved by the skin of our teeth because of things that were extra constitutional, like the military refusing to be used against people protesting and those state officials holding up the process. Our Constitution, our democracy rested on Brian Kemp, the guy who stole the gubernatorial election in Georgia, and now he helped to make this one really pull off. That's a little too dicey for me.
Except, Rosemary, didn't it end up in such a way that you have to give the whatever the component parts and however silly some of this stuff is, Kemp and the rest of it, it worked. In the end, Joe Biden is the president, and we had a guy who was trying to disallow that from happening. So to that extent, right, it worked.
Okay, Alan, here's one more thing. This is not original, but it's a wonderful essay in the New York Times by the Columbia Law professor Wu. He ran for lieutenant governor against Cuomo the last time. And he said the courts really faltered. The Congress was a complete fail. The system set up in the Constitution didn't work. We were saved by three things. Two I mentioned, the military, the state election officials who said, no, we did a great job. And the third thing was the Department of Justice, oddly enough. If Barr had let it be known that Hunter Biden was under investigation and that Joe was part of it, don't you think that might have had a similar effect to Comey saying, oh, we're looking at Hillary. We got by the skin of our teeth. Brian Kemp and Bill Barr, they have saved this election for Biden. That's scary.
You know, You know, I agree with every word you've said, except for, no, not, no exceptions, but in the end, it worked. And that, to me, well, there will be people writing letters and say, yeah, it worked, but, you know, Rosemary's right, and you are right. It worked, but it did go, it did come out the way it should have come out.
Well, it continued to bolster the feelings that I've had almost since the beginning of this administration, which were, I thought, mistakenly so, I thought there were a lot more, many more guardrails than there were. To protect our democracy.
Yes, because this guy, this president, is such a danger, as Rosemary points out, he's a norm breaker. In the end, what we thought were rules, ironclad rules, turns out not to have been so.
JP, we've got about a minute and a half. Go ahead.
I was impressed, really, at the guardrails we do have up. You know, we had a very peaceful, nonviolent day where the Electoral College elected Joe Biden yesterday. I think 2021 is a year where everybody's hoping for a fresh start, and Biden is going to be as opposite to Trump as we could ever imagine having a new president. And I thought that the Biden speech was good. He tried to unify. He said, I'm going to be the president for all Americans, even people we voted against. So I thought yesterday was a great day. And you know, if there's anybody that was going to try to subvert election like Donald Trump, and for us to have a day like yesterday, I thought it was a real tribute to our country and where we are.
We still, to Rosemary's point, though, which is an excellent one, we still have a Senate Majority Leader who has not identified Joe Biden as the president-elect. And that is really frightening. Also, we still have this January 6th congressional move, which 99.9% of the people say will probably fail. But the fact is, they're giving it a shot anyway.
Yeah, it's that one. It's that point.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. 20 seconds, but then we'll continue on the other side.
Go ahead.
I want to point out that it was peaceful yesterday, mostly because some capitals shut down and they were all guarded like hell.
Yes,
It was not a quiet, wonderful, peace and love day.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters. We're already getting a lot. Panel@WAMC.org. We will return. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. We're going to go through some letters, and panel, please jump in when you feel appropriate. Bob says, I don't believe that Barr's resignation was voluntary, especially not 2 days after he publicly said he was staying to the end. I think Trump pushed Barr out because he refused to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate Hunter Biden, and that the toady he replaced Barr with will be making that appointment within days.
I don't know. They said the reading I did was that Trump was not really that familiar with the substitute, with the next guy down, unless, of course, there has been some kind of negotiation that we don't know about.
Right.
But we'll see. He hasn't got that much longer.
No. Josh says Kayleigh McEnany tried to spin Biden's speech yesterday on Twitter as divisive. The replies to her were extremely forceful. I still can't believe the amount of bad faith spinning this administration is capable of spewing. Let's see. David says, the clear Electoral College response to Trump, I say, sic semper tyrannis. All right. We go to Bob, who says, having dutifully studied history, I cannot get the following out of my head. Hitler had his henchmen, the brown shirts and stormtroopers, do solidify his political agenda. Does this sound familiar? The Proud Boys and Trump chumps do not appear to be different. History repeats itself, sort of.
I agree with him, and I've said it and got heavily criticized for it, but that's exactly right.
So Laura wants us to talk about now Stephen Miller is proposing an alternate elector to redo the vote. So who knows about that and would like to discuss it?
Well, he went on Fox News yesterday morning to say what really matters is the inauguration day on January 20th. And we have plenty of time to do essentially that, come up with an alternate system. There were a couple of state capitals where Republicans met in other rooms and kind of went through this charade of being alternate electors who picked Trump when their own real electors who were selected by the people selected Biden. And, you know, they're going to bring it up on January, I think, 6th when the Congress meets and has to accept the Electoral College results. Of course, both houses get to vote on that, and unless both reject them, they are accepted. And I don't know how anyone thinks that the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives would do anything but accept them. In fact, maybe by then enough senators will have acknowledged Biden's win, and even the Senate will accept it.
This is one bad dude.
Yeah. Rosemary, you ready for a mean letter?
Yes.
Okay. Eric says, Rosemary has to make the election sound like a close call with disaster. Otherwise, she would have to admit she was wrong about the outcome. Three things saved us. Are you kidding? 80 million people saved us. This election was irreversible. It would have been social upheaval beyond anything we've ever seen if it was reversed. Barr knew this, and so did everybody but one guy and his most delusional followers.
Okay, if you want to think it was that cut and dry, that's fine. But I think that it wasn't 80 million people. There were there were 7 million people difference between in the popular vote that Joe Biden won, which is great. I'm glad that he won it rather than lost it. But there's 48% of this country is still Trump supporters, still support what the Republicans are doing as far as the economy and the pandemic. Still see nothing wrong with the incredibly, at best, sore loser behavior that we're seeing from the president. And no, we're not nearly as protected as we thought we were. So, okay, I'm sorry you disagree with me, but I don't think that I'm particularly wrong.
Roger says it was gratifying to hear Rosemary admit that it was the media's suppression of the Hunter Biden scandal that allowed Joe to win the election.
Okay, clean your ears out, sir. That is not what I said. Hunter Biden was, in fact, investigated by the media, and they found nothing. The Wall Street Journal would love to have broken that story, but could not find a connection between Hunter and his father. The father is the one who you care about. I've long maintained that Hunter Biden was subject to an investigation. I don't know if they'll find anything, but as far as him being investigated, I don't have a problem with that at all. What I said was that, of all people, Bill Barr did what he was supposed to, what Jim Comey did not, and kept an FBI investigation secret. These are not supposed to have this U.S. attorney, not FBI. And when those investigations are underway, it is not supposed to be public knowledge that they are being investigated, especially close to election. And Barr did that correctly. And it's one of the reasons Trump is so angry at him. So it is not the news media at all. The reason Hunter Biden came out and said, hey, I'm under investigation, is because CNN was about to break the story and had gone to him. So be quiet.
Alan, you were going to say.
No, I agree with Rosemary. You know, with one exception, and that is that I think Hunter Biden poses a risk for this incoming president. It is true that the investigations were there, that nothing was found. Nevertheless, you know, the Clintons did it. He's doing it. You know, there's a certain amount of trading on your official position or that of a relative, which makes me nervous, period.
Rosemary?
I don't disagree.
Okay.
No, I don't disagree. I would be in favor of legislation that outlaws nepotism and those sorts of conflicts of interest that we saw in the Carter administration, the Clinton administration. Name one that didn't have it, you know, where some relative sponges off the influence of the president. It should not happen.
Can I ask something that I know shouldn't bother me, but it did? But we touched on it earlier. But, you know, as you were watching Biden's speech last night and the coughing, I thought to myself two things. One, oh, my God, I hope he's OK. Two, I just assume that the right wing media is going to have a field day. And that certainly was the case on Twitter. But I mean, to Alan's point earlier, I don't know. This campaign has been so so careful not to put their candidate in any jeopardy or any bad situation. And I know you can't stop when you have a tickle in your throat, but this is something that has happened before. There have been circulated videos that have been edited to make him look like, you know, his throat was about to fall out. I just, it troubled me a little bit that, because it also, for me anyway, and I'm sure we'll get letters on this, but it took away from the message.
There's no doubt.
It was difficult to watch it, yeah.
Well, there's no doubt that you're right. It did. Roselle said somebody should have given him a drink of water, sitting there. But yes, it's nervous, and it brings up the whole question of being older and the vice presidency and how important that is right now. And I think they've been playing it that way. Literally, every time he's out there, so is she. I hope that nothing happens to him, but I think that the preparation is there, that she's being seen as somebody who could take over.
JP, what do you think?
Yeah, he's, you know, it's no secret he's an old frail guy, and
he ran out there. They showed that running thing 100,000 times. They showed him running out that day, and that was on purpose.
I mean, fair's fair. Like, we,
yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, we talked about on this show when the president was leaving West Point and was holding on to the railings and all of that, and was out of breath after he got let go from the hospital after COVID, and just this seemed to be. Again, I understand a tickle in the throat. I think we've all had that where, you know, we've always been told, don't eat almonds or drink milk before you go on the radio. But I don't know.
Something you do and I don't. In other words, you observe the rule and I do not. And everybody knows
you
it.
You know, I was just going to say, Fauci on the morning ABC morning show said that he wants to see Biden get the vaccine as soon as possible, and it does underscore that the very best medical coverage you can get is for the president and the vice president. And he says Pence and Trump should also get it because they're currently there. It is really, we've learned in the past that hiding a president's health problems can really be problematic.
And I just want to make it clear, in no way, shape, or form am I saying that I think he has COVID, but I am saying that it does distract from the message at hand. I'll also say that I was listening to that debate last night, and Rosemary, I promise I'll get to you, but I also heard last night that discussion about Biden getting the campaign, and apparently there'd been some resistance by Biden saying that he didn't want to seem like he was jumping in line. And I thought to myself, well, first of all, you're the president, you're the commander in chief, or will be, like, yeah, jump in line, right? I mean, we...
Yeah.
Well, not only that...
No, go.
All of Trump's cronies are trying to jump into line. So, yeah, I would rather it would be Biden. Part of the problem here is the legacy from the Trump years, when medical reports were, to use a pun, doctored. We couldn't trust them. We didn't know what they meant. And now the same with Joe Biden. I think they should hire a physician to just be traveling around with him and to make sure that incidences like last night did not happen. And full reports need to be given. I mean, I want a report today that, you know, he had a tickle in his throat or he had a cold or whatever the heck it was. Because, yes, it is a legitimate cause of concern for the American people.
And we all better believe that there is a separate set of protections for our top leaders. I mean, for example, we do know that Trump got every kind of experimental medicine and everything else that one could possibly get. And so is Giuliani. So that gives us a tremendous amount of confidence that if we get into one of those respirators with nothing, we're going to go.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and JP Miller all make up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Got this letter from Melinda, who says the Electoral College worked this time barely, doesn't instill confidence for the next time.
Well, that's right. We should change it, but you can't snap your fingers and change it.
It takes a lot, obviously.
Okay, if the Republican Senate, can you imagine the Republican Senate going along with a change in the Electoral College, even if they lost it this time? We've had Democratic presidents, or would-be presidents, Al Gore, Hillary Clinton, win the popular vote and lose in the Electoral College.
So I want to go to the, we haven't gone full bore on the Barr story. William Barr to depart as Attorney General. Trump made the announcement, ultimately sharing the letter that he was sent on Twitter. And this comes, as we mentioned before, that it comes after a lot of separation between the two over the last several weeks. One of the things that I did think that was interesting was this came. Trump announced this about, I don't know, somebody can probably fact check me on this, but within like 10 or 15 minutes from Biden getting the Electoral College win. So, I mean, many thought that it was a deflection. And looking to it, the president did write that he and Barr had had a, quote, nice meeting at the White House, and that Barr would be leaving just before Christmas to spend the holidays with his family. He is leaving on December 23rd. And the president did post a copy of the resignation letter in which Barr indicated he had just provided the president an update on the department's review of voter fraud allegations. There was a report also that as Barr was leaving the White House yesterday, he walked out of the White House with the governor of Texas. That seemed odd to me, right? Was that just me or was that?
I didn't even see that. But do you think this will go this 2 days before Christmas? Do you think this is an appropriate story for the Hallmark Channel?
Well, you know, Barr came into the Justice Department saying he was going to restore it and protect it and save it. And he was always a big believer in presidential power, and that he used to justify his completely bogus interpretation of the Mueller report, which really knocked it off the rails. But in the end, what Trump wanted him to do was basically too much for him. And that was where they departed. So, I mean, even he had a threshold that got pushed to the limit. And the question is, did he resign or was he fired?
So there, the officials are saying he was not fired. But what do you think really is the case?
I think he was negotiated.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So earlier,
well, his letter was a simpering list of fawning compliments. It was
right,
there was
right.
Nothing noble about his administration or his departure. I don't care whether he was fired or he's leaving, but Merry Christmas to us all that he's gone.
So what happens now? I mean, somebody mentioned this earlier in the panel of who takes over, JP, do you think, for the next month?
I don't know who takes over, but I agree with your earlier letter writer that I think that it's possible that Trump was telling Barr that he needs to appoint a special counsel to investigate Hunter Biden before he leaves. I think that Trump still feels like it was unfair that he had a special counsel appointed in the early days of his presidency. And he wants to, I think, get back at Biden. I think Trump's, you know, upset about the media embargo on the Hunter Biden story until after the election. And I think that that's really what Trump is really focused on in terms of leaving and getting a special counsel appointed for Hunter Biden.
Robert is warning us in his letter to the panel saying we are not done yet. Joe still has to be sworn in as president. January 20th is still a long way off until he puts his hand on that Bible and takes the oath of office. Any crazy thing can happen.
Well, that's true, except that it's great that the Electoral College has met, because I think that the law or the Constitution, I wish I remember which, is quite clear that once the electoral vote is in, then if something happens to him, she takes over. That was not true before the Electoral College met.
We got this from Mickey, who says, I was thinking the same thing about Biden's coughing, with him trying to clear his throat was going to be used against him. But at the same time, it is ridiculous. COVID or no COVID, this is the time of year when everybody wakes up with a runny nose and an itchy throat. Even myself as a 27-year-old has been going through this every day. I do wish he had had some water. But one thing I do want to say is it's nice to have a president who will clear their throat or re-say a phrase or word if they misspeak, unlike Trump with mispronouncing and making up words and continuing it as if it were written in stone.
I'll take it.
Then we go to Rosalind, who says, FYI, I was on a thank you call from the Biden campaign after the speech. Biden apologized for the throat clearing, saying he had a bit of a cold. We go to Tracy, who says, I'm a little disappointed to hear the panel make such a big deal of Biden clearing his throat during the speech. I did not hear him cough. Wow. I only heard him clearing phlegm from his throat. Well, okay. People do that every day. He did not seem sick at all to me. I would expect right-wing media to be saying that Biden is on his deathbed, but not this panel. I just think it was made too much of.
Well, we didn't say he was on his deathbed. Come on now.
No, I think...
Not only that, the fact that every one of us was struck by that and made note of it, I think is reflective of what was going on with the American public when the speech was on. Come on, we don't change it. That's the way it is.
I don't know that I see a clear difference between clearing your throat and coughing, but okay.
I think that Joe Biden is going to have to deal with this throughout his presidency. Two things, his son and the behavior of Hunter Biden and the state of his health. And it's fine. This may be good that it came up now. And I hope that Dr. Jill Biden will pay attention to that, too, and make sure that he is protected.
If only.
Oh, you know, we talked about the Dr. Biden story for a long time yesterday, Rosemary. But I do wish you were part of the conversation. I did miss hearing your thoughts
on
it. Did we miss anything on it?
I was quite outraged. Did you miss anything? No, I don't think so. I mean, it makes me crazy. The first thing I thought of was Henry Kissinger, who also didn't have a physician's degree. He was a PhD, and yet there was never any editorial like that. The guy who wrote the editorial has since said, oh, you know, I sort of thought it was funny. I was trying to make a joke. And I can see that. When I read it, I can sort of see it. Like, kiddo, that's just too insulting to have not been joking. But the Wall Street Journal is different. They ran it, and it just so annoying. I think she's going to be a fabulous first lady. And I'm glad that she's a teacher, because that's an occupation in this country that needs a strong champion, which she will be. And it's damn hard to get a PhD. I would never have called her doctor. Now I'm going to.
And as far as it being a joke, Alan, as you always quote.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever.
No joke. That's right. Nobody, there is no joke, says Floyd.
Right. Yes. Okay, so let's go to, we just have a few minutes here before the top of the hour. When we come back, I do want to talk about, coronavirus and the vaccine and what happened yesterday. And then the big question of whether it should be required or not, and we'll talk about that. In the meantime, we'll take a few more letters. We go to Linda, who says, I believe that Barr has been banished to make way for a special counsel investigation into Hunter Biden. On the 20th, Joe Biden should pardon his son. Done.
Come on, that won't happen. It would be a bad idea.
Does not seem like it would be a good idea.
No.
Let's see.
I guess it was a joke.
I think so.
But as Freud said, there is no joke.
Oh, Stigmund.
How much time do you need to devote to a dry thought, is what this says. I assume on cough. Hope he's not sick. Move on already. Get better, writers, for your show. Barr wrote a ridiculous kiss-ass letter.
All right. I want to meet the writers.
Wait. What writers? What writers? If we had writers, this show would be better.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes. Yeah. I was going to say, you really, sometimes, as Alan indicated earlier, you should get a look at the mail we don't read on the air.
Some of it is so bad, is so mean, and is so on the ledge of criminal that you really wonder who's out there.
I'm surprised that those people are listening.
What did you say, Rosemary? No, no. Those are your favorites.
Rosemary said those are my favorites.
I mean, there's like just such incredibly rich writing in them and venom. It's great.
Yeah, they have writers.
Yeah.
Carl says, why can't or shouldn't the U.S. invoke the Defense Production Act or some other similarly persuasive power to authorize and, in fact, compel Pfizer and Moderna to share their secret formulas and technologies with every other reputable pharmaceutical company on the planet to start production of a truly global scale? Much easier and faster than tackling, say, global warming, yet so important to every one of the 7 billion humans on Earth for every other one of the 7 billion humans to be vaccinated. Well,
it's a good idea. The WHO is worried that there won't be enough money to pay for the vaccine for poor countries, it's a high moral ground that the writer is taking, and you can't disagree with it, except that these are businesses that are out to make billions of dollars, and that's what comes first, unfortunately.
To which I would add, ain't capitalism great?
Yeah.
Have to look at where was the research done? Why haven't the Europeans come up with a virus or a vaccine? You know, the our country does the research, right? And I would 100% support giving that formula to other companies. But, I would say that the company should be saluted for coming up with the vaccine and, of course, should share the formula with others.
And JP, I would add to that.
I hope that the number two thing that Biden does after firing DeJoy from the post office is rejoining the World Health Organization so that
he
we can contribute money and this sort of technical information to help the entire world. That's the role of a world power, which we used to be before Trump.
So, Lorraine, we've been taking some flack for discussing the president-elect's cough. Yes. And Lorraine says, I can't be the only person who Googled last night what happens if the president-elect dies. We may all have some PTSD after so many shoes dropping over the past 4 to 5 years. Cut us worriers a little slack.
Yes,
Lorraine, we're with you. Thank you. We'll be back with more of our panel discussion after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you all with us. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, JP Miller, all making up the panel this morning. Panel at WAMC.org for you to join in. Let's go to the vaccine and talk about that and what happened yesterday as far as the first vaccines being given. The shots represented giant leaps in efforts to beat back a pandemic that has infected more than 16 million and has killed more than 300,000 nationwide. We did go over the 300,000 mark of death yesterday, which is very sad. The injection to Sarah Lindsay's arm at Long Island Jewish Medical Center made her the first American to receive the coronavirus vaccine outside a clinical trial. The small dose represented a giant leap in efforts to beat back the virus, a moonshot worth of hope amid a pandemic that has infected more than 16 million people. The question now is, this is an issue that we were talking about just a moment ago before we went to break. Developed in record time, it is expected eventually to help end a pandemic that has crippled much of life in the United States and globally for the better part of a year. Vaccinations rolled out across the country Monday with doctors and nurses at hospitals injecting one another as part of a federal plan to prioritize frontline healthcare workers. Some said that they had dedicated the experience to the patients they had lost or to family members they had seldom seen as they battled round-the-clock save orders. All of this comes as, and JP has this on the Empire Report front and center, that the governor is saying it is very possible for a New York State to have another shutdown, perhaps not as long as the last one, but yet another shutdown. And so a lot going on. Alan, your thoughts?
Well, there is a good deal going on. I desperately want a shot myself, and I'm old. So theoretically, I should get it. I suppose our wonderful news division will do a story about exactly what you do to get a shot. You call the CVS. What do? You call the Fairview Hospital. You know, I think, you know, the 75% now want it, which is up from the 50% who said they were going to want it. I think it's miraculous if you can get it, and if it works, it's terrific. So I'm all for it. What else can I tell you?
Mike, from all accounts, it probably will take a while for the general public to be able to get it.
Yeah, the estimates are that, well, Dr. Fauci said yesterday again that probably the general public, after all the different groups, and those groups do include people who are older than 65 with certain compromised health conditions. They include frontline employees in important jobs, not just in healthcare, but certainly people who work in stores and make deliveries. So there's a whole bunch of people in line, but the general public, you know, people under age 65 who don't have special health problems should start getting the vaccines in March, and that might take a couple months, but it could. You know, you could see light. We do see light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, this is, as Andrew Cuomo called it yesterday, the weapon that will end the war. And it's still going to be a difficult time to get through. You still have to wear a mask. Health experts say that even after you've had the vaccine, you could get droplets in your nose and you could sneeze and pass it to somebody else, even though you wouldn't get it. And you really need to protect others. So until enough people get it, we are going to still have to be vigilant about how we behave.
You know, JP, I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound more negative than I mean it to be, but the governor has been tap dancing around this issue, and I really don't mean that negatively, but has come close to saying that there could be a shutdown, another shutdown, and yesterday came out and said it, which I think we were all had in the back of our mind, and now it's just a question of. I mean, he made two points. One is that we can still stop that if we all come together and the numbers go down. But if they continue in the manner that they are expected, it will mean that for the state of New York.
Yeah, Governor Cuomo, in the beginning of the pandemic, remember, I think the population was frenzied and worried. And his job was to calm people and say, we're going to get through this. This is how we're going to do it. And he now kind of has the opposite job where people have their comfort zones now about how they go about their daily lives, and he's trying to raise people's awareness, raise people's worriedness level so that there's not as many interactions and so that we don't have to go into a shutdown. And I think that it's very smart that he's doing that. He wants more than anyone to avoid shutdown and avoid, you know, lack of economic activity and lack of tax revenue. So I think that his alarm bells is a sound, smart leadership move on his part. I also want to mention that on the vaccine, seeing the front page of the New York Times, the New York Post, the woman in Long Island that got the vaccine, I was struck last week when they did the first vaccines in the United Kingdom. It was two old white people getting the first vaccines. And I don't have anything against old white people, but to have a young African-American person get the first vaccine, Governor Cuomo has also been saying it's so important that we get African-American and Latino communities to get vaccinated. I thought that it was a great picture to be on the front page of the newspapers and a great selection for who to get the vaccine. Not that she was chosen based on those demographics. I just thought it was a good message. Also, someone that's young saying that, you know, the vaccine isn't just for old people, it's for everybody. So I thought yesterday on the vaccine front, great day for New York, great day for the country.
Rosemary?
I'm not sure that I have that much to add, except that I regret that Andrew Cuomo wrote his book on leadership lessons of the pandemic. I think he put it in too early for exactly the same thing that JP is talking about now. This is a much longer crisis than I think he anticipated, and there's a lot of flexibility that's being required of him, and he's being attacked because of that. So it's really interesting to watch. Watch him do this. Aside from the, you know, the human drama and horror of what's going on, I continue to think he's doing a commendable job, certainly a defensible job that I would read a book about. So I regret that he wrote his book early. And I think that it is one of the tremendous jobs of Cuomo and the Biden administration ahead to get this vaccine into minority neighborhoods, which have a longstanding and actually much deserved mistrust of the medical field. But this is a pandemic that has struck their communities more than the white communities that I live in. And I really don't want to see them hurt again by distrust from the past.
Rosemary, how do you think the governor did yesterday in responding to the sexual harassment allegations leveled against him?
Yeah, really interesting story. As you know, I think that every woman should be listened to. And I think this woman deserves being listened to. In fact, I think the Times Union has already done that. They have been looking for collaboration and for any sort of proof. That is not to say that every woman has to be believed. She has to be taken seriously. And I think that that is being done. I hope that it is not true. So far, there's just not a bit of evidence that corroborates it. And that's telling. I mean, I think Cuomo has a long, long reputation as a bully and kind of hard to get along with. And that can sometimes seem like harassment. So is that it? I don't know. The fact that the woman has said, no, I don't want to talk to the news media. She just wants to do what? Go on a blog and make innuendo. That makes me a little bit nervous. I'm a feminist, but I also am the mother of sons, and a certain amount of fairness has to go into this process. So far, I'm happy with the way it's been handled.
Who on the panel did not eye roll when you saw that Elise Stefanik was calling for an investigation?
Boy, I sure did. I said some bad words.
Well, you know, Stefanik, I mean, she carries water for Trump. And this, you know, going after Cuomo instantly, she wanted to go after him on the nursing homes, which a lot of people did.
Yep.
You know, the number of deaths in nursing homes.
But sexual harassment?
Yeah. It does. It really boggles the mind. Read our friend Chris Churchill's column today in the Times Union about her own hypocrisy.
Right.
Because she supported the Texas lawsuit. And he just nails it. I think she's she has gone full Trump, and hypocrisy is one of the traits of that.
And our friend Chris Churchill can hardly be described as a lefty, 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 lefty. I mean, he's a moderate to conservative, I think is fair to say. So if he goes after her, I think that's significant.
And Chris will be on the show tomorrow to defend himself, just so you know.
What did I say then?
Oh, no. I was just saying to defend his argument made by, because we will ask him about the column, that's all. Not an allegation that you made.
No.
I second that endorsement. It's really well done. Very well argued. I liked it.
It is a, so... I find it interesting, and I don't know what you do with that kind of thing, with where you have somebody who's saying, "Okay, well, we have to call for an investigation," but it does bring up the question of where does this go? What's the next step? Where does this go from here? Does it just die, and does it have any political? Does it impact what could have been Andrew Cuomo being asked to be Attorney General of the United States?
Rosemary, what did you mean when you said you have boys, you have sons?
Well, I have sons, so I'm not completely deaf to the argument of men that this pendulum has swung too far to the other way and we're ready to condemn them without any kind of proof or verification.
Due process, yeah.
In this case, I do not dismiss this woman out of hand. Like, oh, that's ridiculous. I do not do that. But on the other hand, so far, her story has not borne up, and her behavior has not made me trust her either.
Mm. And I think it's fair to say that Libby felt the same way yesterday on the panel.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong about that, Jim?
No, no. Yeah. No, I think that was the general consensus of the panel yesterday. So what is this? Mike, I mean, do you think he had a shot of being AG, or he still does and does he even want the job?
Yeah, you know, those are all good questions. Alan, I agree with you. I think he would say he doesn't want the job until he's offered the job, and then he'll make a decision. It does evoke the whole thing about Mario Cuomo being considered for Supreme Court justice by Bill Clinton. Being asked is an honor if he does indeed get asked. And yeah, I think that if there was a close contest between Andrew Cuomo being asked to be Attorney General and somebody else, like Deval Patrick or somebody else, this allegation, because of the timing of it, and perhaps it was behind the timing of it, I have no knowledge of that, but this allegation could be a distraction that would sway it against Andrew Cuomo. On the other hand, this might be an isolated incident, and we may never hear any others. I think it's up to other people to step forward and basically corroborate what these allegations
are. Can I also remind you that Biden himself was the subject of a bizarre sexual harassment claim too, that he pinned a woman in the hallways of the Senate and did her. That was crazy too. And she was taken, I think, way more seriously than she ought to have been. And he got out of it. So don't you think he would be sympathetic to this kind of charge coming against Cuomo, especially at this time in this politically charged situation?
I read it just a little bit differently. It might not be that Biden won't pick him. It might be that he'll be more anxious to be attorney general than to be governor because of this kind of an accusation. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Huh.
So another might go the other way.
We have breaking news that has just cleared the wire. Mitch McConnell has publicly recognized Joe Biden as president-elect.
Oh, then he must be.
Oh, my God.
So that's two in one day. That's two in one day. You got your Putin. We always say you're here in the Berkshires. You got your Putin and you got your McConnell.
Yeah. Now he went on to say that December is the 12th month of the year. So I think we're clear on all this now. Earth is round.
You better have someone tasting his food before you eat it.
Oh, okay. So,
yet Kentuckians put him back in, and he is supported by 48% of Americans. Oh, my God.
So, we got a note from Jim. He was upset because we said that we read the letter from Lorraine right before the news saying that she Googled, what happens if the president-elect dies. Well, Jim was upset because he wanted to know the answer to that question, so he looked it up. He reports to us, once Biden is selected by the Electoral College, he officially becomes the president-elect. If he were to die between the Electoral College vote, but before the early January congressional certification, members of Congress have an opportunity to object to the electoral results in any state, and if both chambers agree, to switch the state's votes to the opposing candidate. It's pretty hard to imagine Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic House Speaker, agreeing to hand a state to Trump in any conceivable circumstance. After congressional certification and before Inauguration Day, the 20th Amendment would kick in. It provides that if at the time fixed for the beginning of the term of the president-elect shall have died, the vice president-elect shall become president.
Exactly. Well, okay. That's right.
So that is the answer to that.
It is 2020. I'm just saying. It's 2020.
Soon to be 2021, but yes.
And December is the 12th month.
Yeah,
whatever that means.
Tori says, I heard the journalist Lori Garrett say that there is a problem with the supply line to produce the vaccine. Apparently, a critical element of the vaccine is something called protein K. And since it is also an element in making COVID tests, Protein K is now in short supply. We are testing so much we don't have enough to make significant sufficient vaccine. I've heard different reports on that. I don't know if the panel has any more on it. Hearing nothing, I will move on. Franklin says, one of your panelists stated that it was the U.S. alone who developed the vaccine for COVID-19. The Pfizer vaccine was developed with a German company. The more traditional Oxford vaccine is being developed in the U.K. So
nicely said.
Yes.
Yeah. Good reminder.
I'm sorry?
Good reminder.
Yeah, and I did read today that the European Medicines Agency is expected to give their go-ahead. They're continuing to vet these vaccines, but they should be rolling out in Europe across the EU by the end of the year, they estimate.
Is there anybody on the panel who is not going to take this if they have a chance?
Not me.
Don't all yell at once.
I mean, if sure. Right? Anybody? Nobody will not take it?
I got my flu shot this year.
Yeah, well, Andrew, I do too.
Me too. Andrew asked if I would take it at the same time. I'm not kidding. He was kidding. But he asked if I could take it at the same time he took it, which I thought
I wouldn't wait
flattering.
For that, Alan. I'd go ahead and
no.
get it when you can.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay, let's
That's
go.
Kind of...
Go ahead.
Never mind.
No,
never mind.
Okay.
there's what we call it in journalism.
Come on, Rosemary.
That was called a never mind.
Yeah,
that's a never mind.
So the question is, should it be required? That is the question that is being asked. There's an interesting piece in the New York Times this morning. Should companies require employees to take the vaccine? Depending on the poll you read, 40 to 50% of Americans say they will not get a coronavirus vaccine when it first becomes available to them. In a survey of firefighters in New York City who are essential workers at high risk of infection, 55% said they do not intend to take a vaccine if offered by their departments. The possibility that large swaths of the population may refuse or simply delay getting vaccinated presents a perilous challenge to the health of the nation and the economy. Widespread coronavirus vaccinations are not only the best way to keep the people from dying, they will also help revive business and the economy. There
Absolutely.
Is, so three quarters of this nation, in other words, unless three quarters of the nation is vaccinated, the engine of the economy will not jumpstart the way so many are hoping. The debates about health restrictions and economic stimulus plans would continue. If individuals are left to make the vaccine decision by themselves, a 75% compliance rate may be unattainable. That's why business leaders are so uniquely positioned. They can tell employees that they may only return to the workplace if they get vaccinated. This could be made compulsory for workers everywhere, from factories to offices and beyond. Mandating vaccines would be especially important to help protect workers in minority and lower socioeconomic communities that have been hardest hit in the pandemic. According to a Pew Research poll, only 42% of Black Americans intend to get vaccinated. Beyond social welfare, there's a persuasive argument that a vaccination mandate could be considered a workplace benefit. If employees knew that everyone around them is vaccinated, they would feel more comfortable working there. And it would create a compelling competitive advantage. A service like Uber, for example, would be more attractive to customers if the company said that all of its drivers were vaccinated. The same could be said for Walmart, Starbucks, or any store or restaurant. So,
what about an airplane?
Well,
in
right.
other words,
if you're going to get in it, you have to say that you've been vaccinated.
Right.
You have to prove you've been vaccinated.
Right. So so that's the question. Should companies do this? Panel.
What do you think the Supreme Court will say when that clear case comes to the Supreme Court?
Well, it's already been through the courts, and companies can compel their employees to do it. And that has been upheld. I mean, obviously, you can challenge previous court rulings and, you right. know, all that. But if you're in healthcare or if you're in public safety, wouldn't you want to compel them? But my opinion is that rather than compel people to do it, except maybe in frontline healthcare delivery, you use a full throttle public service campaign to push it. You know, get celebrities, sure. Get LeBron James, Dolly Parton, George Clooney, Warren Buffett, and everybody else to, you know, Barack Obama to walk up and get their vaccine. And you know, it just seems so obvious that if you ran a business, if you ran a gym or you ran a hairstyle business, and you said all of our employees are vaccinated and protected, and you may not come here unless you are, people would go there because they know it'd be safe, or they'd get on a plane because they know it'd be safe if people had to do it. Don't you think that the public tide is going to really quickly move towards getting past all this?
I'm going to let that question hang in the air for at least 3 minutes and 20 seconds, and then we'll let the panel bat at it when we come back right after this. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our last call this morning. And it is 35 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. We welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay, Mike said his piece on that question of should companies make you have to, you know, say yes, you are required to take the vaccine. Rosemary, what do you think?
Well, I think that it won't be effective. I mean, if wearing masks sent people into a frenzy, a gun-toting frenzy in some state, imagine what being asked to be stuck with a needle, required to be stuck with a needle, will do. On the other hand, I sort of think that it would just to annoy them. I kind of like that. And I definitely think in schools that should be a consideration, the same way as you don't want your kids exposed to children who have not been inoculated against measles and other potentially deadly diseases. I think that it should be required in some places. Yeah, I think that vaccines are smart. I don't like or trust anti-vaxxers. I think it's just a really anti-community spirit to say it's a matter of independence. It's not. It's not a matter of freedom. So my short answer is yes, do it.
JP?
I actually don't. I kind of agree with what Mike was saying, is that it's hard to believe it would actually come to that, that people would need to be required. I think that you're going to see widespread adoption early on, especially amongst the elderly. And it's hard to imagine that there's going to be this huge supply of vaccine and that Americans are going to be refusing to take it. You know, over the coming months, we're going to see hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans take this vaccine. And I think there's going to continue to be high demand for it. Another thing, too, is, you know, we're targeting people that are over 60 that are going to be able to get the vaccine early. That is, in New York State, that is 85% of the deaths from COVID-19 are from people that are over 60. So if we get a large percentage of our elderly population vaccinated, you're going to see a huge percentage and number of deaths in New York and across the country decrease, assuming that the vaccine is effective and all, you know, everybody believes it will be effective, 90% to 95%.
Alan?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Joe, I think everybody should have to take it. I think this is one of those things that we decide as a country will stop this terrible scourge that we're facing. And I know that there will be people who say it's my constitutional right not to take it and all the rest of it. Fine, don't take it. But don't get out on an airplane with me. Don't go to a gym. Don't go do all these other things. And those places have the ability to put an awful lot of pressure on.
Something that, did you ever have, when you have a conversation with somebody and they say something and then it just kind of washes over you, and then 3 hours later exactly. You're in the car and it hits you and you're like, oh God, I should have. Dr. Fagan yesterday, Dr. Jim Fagan, who was on our program, was talking about this. And one of the things that came up was that after people get the shot, they won't necessarily have to wear their face mask. So then you have the people who have been inoculated who have not who are not wearing the mask, mixed with people who are just not wearing a mask, and then that becomes very confusing too. Shouldn't just everybody
Joe,
wear a mask?
But Joe, I don't think Jim Fagan was saying people should not wear masks. I think he truly believes and said that they have to continue to. I think what you're quoting was the belief on some people's parts that they didn't have to wear a mask.
Well, that if someone was not wearing a mask, that it could be perceived that they had not, that they had taken the vaccine.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are also the group of people that have had the virus and believe that because of that, they are somewhat immune. We don't know for how long. Should they be required to take the vaccine, or should they take the vaccine? Should they be forced to the end of the line for the vaccine? And there are millions of Americans, obviously, that have had the virus and recovered and have antibodies.
Well, the answer is no. Clearly from Fagan yesterday, you know, the idea is that everybody has to get it, even the miscreant who happens to be living at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is talking about not knowing whether he was going to take it, meaning that's incredible.
Mike? Is Mike there? Mike is not there.
Mike may have gone to get a cup of coffee.
I think it's probably a mute switch.
I'm just
there you
away
go.
Here with my mute button.
Yeah, that it happens. Yeah, we understand.
In the case of mumps, they say that people who have had mumps have a certain level of immunity, but people who take the mumps vaccine have a much higher level of immunity. And that kind of phenomenon goes on with different kinds of things. And they say, to be sure, there is a belief right now that the vaccines give you much greater immunity and longer lasting immunity. And even the Moderna one, that's what the FDA report said today, that it looks like it gives you really powerful immunity. So they're urging people who have had coronavirus and tested positive to still go ahead and get the vaccine, because that way you can be sure of it. And heck, if you had that disease and that illness, wouldn't you want to keep from getting it again? I mean, why wouldn't you want it again?
And we don't know how long it's going to last, right? Am I correct on that? In other words, the one thing about all of this is we do not know, once you get the shot, how long the protection lasts.
Yeah, that's true. They say that, but they say that, you know, that's something we'll learn. But you know, who knows? Maybe the advice, you know, they do have the right to change the advice when they find out more information. And right now, the advice is good advice to just be careful and get the vaccine. I mean, what can it hurt if you've already had the illness? I mean, it'll just give you more protection. At worst, it won't give you any more protection, but why not?
What have you got to lose? Those famous words. James says, I love the idea brought up on the panel of getting celebrities to publicly take the vaccine, but I fear that unless conservative personalities join the cause, there will be a partisan divide, giving vaccines the same fate as masks, something that Rosemary mentioned a moment ago.
This, you know, Joe, that is so interesting. Think about it.
Yeah.
This president wanted the credit for having developed this vaccine in Operation Warp Speed. Now, a poll this morning shows that minority people, and Republicans don't want to take the, in large numbers, don't want to take the vaccine. So here's a president who thought he was going to ride the vaccine to glory and deserve some credit for having pushed it. But think about that for a second, that Republicans seem to be thinking this is some kind of Democratic thing.
Well, you know, I can just see the public service announcement now. Hello, I'm Donald Trump, and I brought you this vaccine. And now I'm going to take it, and I urge you to take it too. You know, a lot of people probably wouldn't take it then.
Have it be branded Trump vaccine.
That would be some SNL skit for sure, Mike. That's good.
Good stuff. Very good.
Well,
I have a
very good friend who said that she would not take the vaccine until Biden was inaugurated. Go figure.
If the president-elect were to take it soon, week, you know, I think that looks good, right?
But there is a political tension in all of this. There shouldn't be, but there is.
I just worry that also being lost in this is the fact that we hit 300,000. We're at our highest death rate.
Dead people.
Yes. We're at our highest rate of hospitalizations. The virus is overloading the medical system. And so, yes, there is a light there at the end of the tunnel, but it's still going to be a really long winter, and it's going to be a lot to get. I mean, just I know this is anecdotal, but just here in Albany, you know, there were 1,000 doses, and obviously
Absolutely. There's
a lot of people. We have 1,000 doses. I mean, that's today, but still, it just gives you an idea of how long it is that we have to go. And I think that message has to get out too. And Mike, I don't quite know how you get that out, especially given the waning days of this administration.
Well, everybody has been saying it's going to be a long, dark winter. And, you know, 2,000, more than 2,000 people a day dying, more than 200,000 testing positive for the disease. I mean, the data doesn't seem to sway people's public opinions. People are fatigued. They want to get together for Christmas. They want this to be over. And yet we just have to hunker down and use our energy to get through this until the vaccine is available for more people. And logically, everything I just said makes sense. Emotionally, I'm just tired of it and I don't want to do it anymore. You know, that's where people are at. It's a tough conundrum.
And without beating a dead horse here, but then you do have people like Representative-elect Bob Good in the state of Virginia, I believe, who say that this is a phony pandemic, and congratulated the many people who showed up at one of his events not wearing masks, saying you are the true patriots and fighters.
Oh, my God. I had a friend telling me yesterday that he had a former colleague who got the disease and died of it. He felt very bad about that, but still the media had overplayed it, because do I know how many people died of tuberculosis last year? It's much worse. And we don't go crazy over tuberculosis. I don't know how you get around that.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't coronavirus the number one killer right now? More than heart disease of Americans?
Correct.
And yeah. I mean, that's a lot more than tuberculosis.
Well, it's not really comparable, because tuberculosis is not the same. It's not, you go out to the supermarket, you don't catch tuberculosis normally. Right. This is a much different kind of infection, but still. By the way, it was 208,000 people in 2019. I just looked it up. So there are twice as many from coronavirus as from TB. So I think I better blast him with that.
Representative-elect Goods said that the coronavirus precautions were a hoax that would not impact who lived or died, while comparing the risk of catching the virus to the risk of getting in a car crash. He was not able to be reached for comment on Monday.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have members of Congress now like him, and like somebody from Georgia who's a QAnon believer, and there are some whack jobs in our Congress, you know, but most of the time they're on the peripheral, and people listen to them for a few seconds and realize, just as we do about Representative-elect Good, the guy's nuts.
Except he got himself elected being nuts. Right. That's the interesting thing.
Yeah, had enough other nuts to elect him. We're out of time. We have to go. But I want to thank you all for being with us. It's a great pleasure. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, JP Miller, thank you. You're listening to
Thanks
the Roundtable.
Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.